Good news, and the CIA should have done it a long time ago. The idea that the CIA knew about this problem, that this information got out of their control last year and doesn't appear to have told the tech companies, is, I think, shameful. And people need to really turn to the CIA and ask them why aren't they standing with tech companies and with the American people and people around the world to have secure products?
Cindy
Cohen, that's where their interest should be.
We want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. That does it for the broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is March the 10th, 2015, and boy, we've got to do this first story, whether we want to or not.
Weather.
Because the weather has been really, really horrendous here. DTE actually made a statement that it was their worst outage ever. I don't know how long they've been around.
100 years.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Because I know they changed their names. So I was thinking maybe, you know, before they were Detroit Edison, and I think it was a separate gas company, and now they're sort of combined together as DTE Energy. And I can't remember when they changed the name, but I was thinking, well, maybe that's only in, like, the last 20 years or something. But no, 100 years. And it was the, although somebody said, some weather person, it was the second worst pure windstorm ever to hit Michigan. In other words, there was no lightning or rain or tornadoes or anything like that. It was just wind.
Wind.
He's doing sound effects again. And so we have a lot of late-breaking news. We're trying to get an update from the city of Dearborn, but they're busy helping people, which is the way it should be. So I've got these two stories from the city of Dearborn website. I'll start right with them first, of course. Tonight, Dearborn Heights are opening emergency shelters again, but not the same one, for residents without power starting at 6 p.m. So at 6 p.m. March 10th. And the locations are Stout Middle School and also McCullough Eunice School in Dearborn. And I guess they will allow people from Dearborn Heights to come to either of those locations also. Here's the rest of the story. The city of Dearborn, in conjunction with Dearborn Heights and the Red Cross, is again opening two overnight emergency shelters, also referred to as warming stations. But it's not just like some place to put your hands. You know, it's it's a whole place where you can sleep, too. They're providing cots and so on. And, of course, the reason is because we're without power in a large percent of this area. It's very spotty. I looked at the DTE Energy map showing the outages, and it's almost everywhere, but it's, you know, one spot, then there is no power outage, then there's another power outage further west or north or south or east or west, and it just goes, of course, it does hit the whole state. Oh, we got a phone call here, so let me try to pick this up. Hi, this is WHFR Radio, Jay Cornick speaking. Is Brad, you said your name was? Okay, Brad, just hang on. We're live right now, but I'll put you on the air, and people can hear you. So just a moment. Okay, Brad, do we have you there? Hello? Uh-oh, did we lose him? Oh, my goodness. Wait a minute. Hello? Uh-oh, we lost him. This darn phone system. J. Just so you know, folks, yes, the show is live, and Brad was on the line there, but one of the reasons we're going to have our Radiothon pledge drive this year, other than the usual expenses we have to handle, is our phone systems, which are internal and specialized just for audio broadcasting. They're more than 20 years old, and they hardly ever work now. So I see that I now have voicemail or something. I don't know who that is, but I will. So I'm hoping, Brad, if you're listening, that you will call back because something happened and we weren't able to transfer you. Here it goes again. Let me try this. Hi there, Brad. We got cut off, I bet. Oh, really? Okay. Oh, my goodness. Okay, I'll turn on. Let's try this one more time. Hang on. Okay, Brad, are you there now?
Yep.
Okay, very good. Brad, tell our listeners, because we are live on the air for the WHFR Journal show, and I just started filling them in a little bit about the situation in Dearborn, but tell people who you are and what you do for the city.
Okay, thanks, Jay. I am the emergency management coordinator for the city of Dearborn. I am a captain on the Dearborn Fire Department. My name is... Brad Smith, and like I said, I work for the fire department, and I am handling disasters and emergencies for the city, major ones.
Yeah, and this definitely counts. I live in East Dearborn, and I don't have any power. But interestingly, I had power until last night, until about 11 o'clock.
More and more people are starting to lose it now than after. So we're getting some power up, and we're losing power elsewhere.
Right, and I don't know if they're doing that because they have to actually shut down some areas in order to fix the whole larger grid, or whether it's just the sort of daisy chain effect that we had back, was it 2003 or 2004, if you were around and remember that. There was about 4 days of power outage in the Detroit area.
That was 2003, August.
Yeah. DTE said, 800,000 in our service area out of 2.3 million lost power. But they said, it's only about 500,000 now. Well, I don't think that's quite true. I mean, they add my neighborhood back in because I think we're losing some more people, too, along the way, as you just said. And probably in Dearborn, what would you guess? Maybe not quite half of the residents are without power?
No. Well, when the first numbers came in, we were at like 7,200 addresses, customers without power.
Okay.
And that includes both residential and commercial.
And that's out of about, 20,000 households in Dearborn?
I believe so, yes. I'm not sure with those numbers. And then we haven't had an update from DTE, current one today, so we're still going to stick with that 7,000 guesstimate number.
I would think they're pretty busy. So, and you're pretty busy, too, as Dearborn's emergency manager. Not financial manager, of course, but you're with the fire department here, and you help coordinate, I guess, all the activities when big problems come up like this windstorm.
Right.
So what have you been doing? What's the top of your list? I just started talking about the so-called warming station, the shelter that's being set up just for tonight, not the same as last night, I guess, if you want to make a comment about those.
Yeah, sure. It started Wednesday. I was asked to activate the CERT team, the Community Emergency Response Team. That's a group of volunteer citizens that help during times of need, and this is definitely one of them.
Mm-hmm.
We started setting up areas where the police and fire were sitting on wires down and relieving them so that they could actually go to house fires and medicals and accidents. There was a couple times where every piece of apparatus we had was busy. And dispatch was just, if anybody can take a call, please, this is the one to go to.
Yeah.
So we started clearing those crews up with the volunteers. The police had every reserve and explorer out there that they had, and interns. So we had all hands on deck for police and fire.
And people would report problems to you just by dialing 911, right?
Yeah, and even then, sometimes there were so many calls coming in that they were going to the state police, and the state police would forward the call back to the fire station where I was at.
Oh.
And so it was a madhouse. It was pretty hectic for a good 12 hours.
Mm-hmm. I walked around my neighborhood, which is Springwells Park. It's Evergreen and Rotunda, sort of northwest of that section there, and a couple of big trees, pine trees, interestingly enough, very tall pine trees were just brought up by the roots. One was brought up out of the ground and then fell down and hit another pine tree, and then that one fell down.
Kind of a cascade domino effect.
And then about a 2-foot diameter branch off of a very big tree fell down and covered somebody's front yard. But out of my neighborhoods, I'm guessing maybe, oh, I don't know, maybe 200 homes, there wasn't, didn't seem to be any damage to the houses. Do we know if there was any individuals that had health problems or got hit by a branch or anything?
To the best of my knowledge, we've had no major incidents or people getting hit by debris or crushed or injured.
Mm-hmm. Good, good.
Something to be cautious, though, of, you know, people are going to go out there and start clearing debris with chainsaws or handsaws. You obviously want to know how to operate your tool, but when they start cutting those trees down, and if it's toppled over, mm-hmm. and a root ball has pulled out of the
yep.
earth,
mm-hmm.
As they cut the trunk, the weight might spring that tree back into the ground, so to speak.
Oh,
and
wow.
If anybody's in that area or kids are playing, you know, in the area, it's kind of cold out for that right now, but there have been incidents throughout the nation of the tree being cut, the trunk, and the weight of the root sack being pulled back onto the ground and trapping people underneath them. So
careful
of where you're doing and where you're working.
So the city of Dearborn doesn't directly help. Maybe indirectly you give advice about who to contact or whatever to take care of tree problems?
There's all kinds of tree trimming companies and things like that.
Yeah.
The city will help clear roads, clear major avenues so the police and fire emergency vehicles can get up and down. As far as cutting the trees down in residential, I do not believe they were doing that.
That 2-foot diameter, 20-foot long branch that I mentioned actually covered a sidewalk, a public sidewalk. Is that a issue for the city or not?
It may very well be, yes. They might want to call that in to the city and try to get that squared away.
Okay, I don't know, but it's I don't know how much, you know, you've got to respect the sidewalk legally.
right. You got to be able to, the mailman's got to be able to walk up and down. And
yes, absolutely.
Ways of egress for the citizens, disabled persons as well. So yeah.
I got my mail delivered on Wednesday and yesterday too, despite, you know, the mail must go through. So
hey, it didn't blow away. So.
No. Okay. My colleague, John Conroy is here too, and he could talk if I'd let him, but say hello, John.
Hello, Brad. How you doing?
Okay.
Good, John. How you doing, sir?
Okay. I just have one little thing. Yes.
Regarding shaving branches off a tree, especially a large pine tree, individuals should be warned to take those branches off first before you try to go after a trunk, because those trunks do spring up, you know.
Yep.
Sounds like John has done that before.
Yes.
Cutting a tree down is a lot easier than cutting a tree that's been damaged.
Mm.
You don't know how it fell. You don't know what it's leaning on. You don't know what it's being propped on. And sometimes they have a wicked bend to them, and people get hit by the branches when they spring back sometimes, yes.
And you said there's still some homes losing power, but maybe some other damage too. Maybe some trees have been weakened, and even though it's not really very windy today, I don't think. I didn't think it was
right.
When I went out. There might still be some things that were related to the storm that might still happen.
Oh, yeah. We still have lots of calls of limbs hanging loosely or looking as if they're, you know, going to fall down any minute on the wires or on a house, so we still send crews out for that. And most times, unless it's an imminent danger, there's not a whole lot we can do for that.
Sure. Do you have any knowledge about how many houses or how many calls came in from people to 911? Is that a way to sort of estimate the severity here?
Well, on the fire side, I can say that we had just for the 7th. Midnight to midnight, we took 196 calls for the fire department alone. I don't know how many were taken for the police department,
mm-hmm.
but that's almost triple of what we do on a normal day.
It's kind of crazy, but in the Metro Times website today, I noticed that the city of Detroit received a lot of 911 calls from people, and the complaint specifically was, there's high winds out there. So the city of Detroit was saying, don't call us if it's just high winds. We know there's high winds, but if there's, you know, some related problem, then you call us, but we can't do anything to stop the high winds. It was just kind of silly, but the 911 in Detroit apparently issued it. Official statement, or maybe that's just what they told everybody. It's nice to know that 911, both fire and police, are there for you if you need help, rescue, right, or whatever. Number of car accidents, do you have an idea if that was? Because, boy, one of the things about the Metro Times article, and I wish all the other articles I've read in the other papers have mentioned this, some people don't understand that when there's a traffic light out at an intersection, you have to treat it as a four-way stop, which means you come to a stop. And if you were the last one that got there, you wait until the other people cross in front of you, and hopefully they don't continue, you know, and the next one will stop and let you go through. But I've seen so many near misses over the last couple of days.
There's been a lot of, slight fender benders, nothing drastic to my knowledge, or severe to where somebody was fatally injured or things like that. Yeah. But we've had numerous calls, fender benders all the way up to some accidents.
I think some people have forgotten about the what you should do if a intersection traffic light is down, is not functioning, and that you have to treat it as a four-way stop. I don't think
needs to come back a little bit more, I think.
Well, certainly, that's what it would be, but it's also a safety issue. Anyway, so we thank Metro Times for bringing that up in their article today anyway. So we were back to the warming stations, which is there's two schools. I just got done mentioning the school names, Stout and...
McCullough Eunice.
Yeah, McCullough Eunice. Why was it changed from the Ford... Performing Arts Center?
The Performing Arts Center has a venue starting this evening, and then there's a couple concerts.
Oh, I see.
Well.
You got activities, of course. Oh, duh.
can't double book a large event.
Sure, right.
And
how many?
So, we were able to use the city facility to the best of its ability, and then we partner with Dearborn Public Schools. Can't give enough thanks to them for their support. And they're still struggling. They, as of right now, they still have six schools without power as well.
So. Yeah, most of the local schools have been down for a couple of days, and whether they had problems or just they couldn't, they had a problem getting the students and the teachers in, perhaps, too, because...
Everybody's losing power, and after 2-3 days without power and no showers, no hot meals, it takes a toll on the people, and, we're not going to go to work, we're going to try to... bail out our basements if they're full of water, or get sub pumps, or get generators, fuel up the generators if they're running, and kind of an all hands on deck.
In terms of the two schools here, again, it's Stout Middle School in Dearborn and McCullough Eunice School in Dearborn.
Yes.
And they can probably call 911 to get the exact addresses. They don't know that, but also Dearborn Heights.
I'd rather not call 911 for an address for a school.
Okay.
Because that is an emergency number.
What do you suggest?
The address for Stout is 18500 Oakwood Boulevard.
Okay, sure.
It's a kitty corner of Oakwood Hospital, Oakwood Beaumont. And then McCullough Eunice, I believe, is at 7801 Maple.
And of course, if they have charged up their phones and they're still working, they could search for those addresses on some sort of map thing and find the location that way. How many beds are there? Because that's what the shelters provide. It looks like they're providing cots for sleeping and basic blankets and pillows. There's no food service, is there?
We're working on food. Last night we had pizza delivered. It was kind of delivered right around 9:30, 10 o'clock. Right now, we've set the shelters kind of a guesstimate for 200. We're setting them up in stages of 25 at a time. So
if we
look like we're starting to fill up that 25, we'll bring another 25 cots and blankets out. And we'll just keep doing that in stages rather than setting up the whole area for 200 people and maybe 10, 15, 20 people.
We should say, of course, space is available on a first-come, first-served basis.
Right.
But it's great to have that, you know, backup if there's no other option for people. I would assume even if you could afford a motel room or hotel room, because of so many outages over the whole metro area here, that a lot of those facilities are full up, too, if you could afford it, you know.
You're winding up traveling a little bit further north to find a place now, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
A lot of people going to friends and family, you know, neighbors across the street. I'm hearing great stories where my house has power, you don't. Hey, you know, just bring your kids over and, you know, we'll keep you warm. We'll barbecue. We'll do something community-wise. And
yeah,
so
yeah.
We're hearing a lot of great stories of that, and I want to shout out to the communities that are doing that.
Absolutely.
Good neighbors.
Yeah, beside your CERT team, I guess, Red Cross is helping, too, with the shelters?
Yep, Red Cross provides the cots and the bedding.
Okay.
And then we've had DTE is actually contacting us. They have a volunteer organization as well, and they're going to be sending out some people to help with the shelters. And they're bringing blankets and I believe there's some cots or some comfort items as well.
I did hear earlier today from the public information Dearborn there that your dry ice distribution, you ran out of dry ice.
Man, we've done this, you know, throughout the years, and in the summertime, sometimes we don't get as huge a turnout of people in the summertime wanting to get dry ice to keep their food. But we ran out in 2.5 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Of 4,000 pounds of dry ice, and they were given away in I believe they're 8-pound chunks. So that's a lot of chunks of dry ice.
My first crazy thought, and of course then I rethought it, but my first crazy thought was, well, just put it outside in a barrel or something in your backyard. But that might mean, you know, that animals might get to it, whether it's, you know, aggressive squirrels or rats or I don't know what else.
Coyotes.
I don't know. Do we have coyotes, John?
Oh, yeah, there's coyotes, fox, wolf.
What's
deer.
That other one that I had in my house? A raccoon. Yeah,
raccoons.
They're
awesome.
They're vicious. They got big teeth too. Those raccoons. So,
but you know, if you put it in your garage it in your car,
right?
You know, it's safe. It's secure. But yeah, a lot of people were just because I actually said that to a couple folks today. And one gentleman was like, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, well, of course, because it's going to stay cold for, below freezing, maybe even today during the day, and then get down to the teens tonight. So that should help. We have an article that was actually linked from the cityofdearborn.org website about, how long you can keep food safely in your refrigerator. But I think you'd need a temperature gauge in your refrigerator because it talks about anything held above 40 degrees for over 2 hours, get rid of it.
It can start to create problems.
It's probably better to get
without power than have an upset stomach and a GI problem going.
Right. But I assume
you're uncomfortable to begin with, and then you're sick. So.
It doesn't talk about your freezer, though. And of course, I assume if, let's say you had a frozen hamburger or something in there, if touching it, it's still solid, I mean, really still frozen.
Oh, yeah.
Then that wouldn't be a problem to get rid of that. But if it's squishy at all, then that's probably not a good sign.
Yeah, if you're not sure, just pitch it. You know, better be safe than sorry.
Absolutely. A lot of people die from food poisoning.
We were one of the few families in our neighborhood that had gas stoves.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of our neighbors would ask us to cook their food for them and barbecue, and we did a lot of that. And so we did a lot of block parties, when we lost power back in the day as a kid.
Yeah, and it just seems that because it's so cold, you can't, I mean, you need to leave your house unless you have, a fireplace and a lot of wood available. And even that's problematic because if you haven't used it in a while, chimneys that have built up soot or whatever, sometimes that can burst into flames too.
You get chimney fires, and it's always good to get those inspected or cleaned prior to the burning season.
Well, last but not least, at least on my list here, and then anything else you'd like to say about the situation, the News Herald from downriver, their website talked about some of the cities, actually some of the libraries were opening charging centers, as they called them, so people could come in and have access to a plug outlet to at least charge up their phones, because most people these days don't have landlines. And if they need to communicate for any reason, and there's a lot of reasons in this situation, they've got to have the phone charged somehow. So, but I assume, are our libraries open? Do you know? Our public libraries?
During normal work hours, Monday through Friday, yeah, the libraries are open. And I've seen people at every outlet at the Performing Arts Center charging phones last night.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's kind of a lifeline. Everybody's got to have their cell phone and their iPad or a little tablet to read books or do study. And so we saw a little group of students doing homework by iPod light.
I guess I
or
should
tablet light.
I guess I should say that Henry Ford College is on its spring break this week, so don't come here. We were open for the first couple days this week just because of administrative purposes and enrolling new students for spring and summer, I guess. But, I mean, we officially closed just coincidentally on Wednesday. One building lost power, a building that wasn't part of our contiguous campus. It's on the north side. And so I think they closed the whole campus Wednesday. But then yesterday and today, it's the spring break. So everybody's gone pretty much. So we can't provide any help to people who need charging or anything else, I'm afraid. But normally, I bet we might want to get involved, you know, if we could. You don't know that U of MD is doing anything. Well, they might be on break the same week. I don't know. But you haven't heard anything about U of MD providing any sort of public facilities?
No, I haven't heard of heard of that. I haven't heard through my contacts with them either now. So.
Yeah, all right.
But the restaurants like Tim Hortons and McDonald's and all those in the area, and people are plugging in there.
They could charge, put a dime slot machine next to the.
They could make a lot of money, probably.
A dime an hour or something.
Oh, sure.
And it is it is true that businesses, they're on like different types of power lines. So if the residential goes down, the businesses usually don't.
Sometimes, yeah, because businesses have a much larger draw of electricity, you know, to man. Mm-hmm. Manage their stores and things like that. So it might be a different power grid altogether. Some of them might have been wise enough and invested in a generator prior to this this incident so that they could stay open and continue to serve their customers during the power outages.
Well, it's just been all kinds of incidents. I know John here with me lives in Groseal, and he lost cell phone. A cell phone tower went down, so they don't have any cell phone service down there. But he's got electrical power, nonetheless. So
that's unique, and that could raise problems too, because like you said, not many people have lifeline or landlines.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot less communication.
If there is an emergency call, they can't use their cell phone to do that.
That's really what's going on. That we have two cell towers out there, and they're just not functioning very well. So people are not able to contact others in the general area. You know.
Yeah, that could be a huge problem for them.
Yeah, it has been. I have one also a little more different problem, and that is with houses in their basements, because wind will blow so strong that the foundations are exposed and more water can get down and damage their basements.
We're hearing, I have a sub pump in my house, and we lost power, so that's been a challenge.
Wow.
My son's got the generator up and running, but a lot of people, the basement, the sub pumps start backing up, and thankfully there hasn't been there wasn't rain with this storm, or there'd be a lot more flooding.
Could have been much worse. I agree. Yeah, I mean there was rain earlier in the week, but not so much when the big winds came.
Yep. Yeah. It's mostly residual water that's hitting the drain pumps now, or the sub pumps.
Gotcha.
And we'll take that blessing.
Yes.
it was wind and not rain with it.
So what are you up to next? Everything? You just got to double check on all the ongoing progress?
Yep. Right now, I finally had a few hours to sit in front of a computer and answer my emails that started Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so now I'm doing that and getting the two shelters up and running. Unfortunately, we don't have dry ice.
Right.
So at 6 o'clock tonight, the two shelters will be up and running. I'll be starting at Stout and working my way to Eunice, checking and managing and getting things up with that. We have a great team of volunteers with the Dearborn Police Department as well, with their paid interns, their enforcement officers, the patrol officers, plus the explorers and the reservists as well. So we've been a resource-rich, blessed city to have this, along with the shelters.
Just and, a final, well, another point, just crazy, all these crazy ideas come. Who fixes the traffic lights? Is that DTE?
DTE provides power, but some of them may be county operated or state.
Right.
Some of them, on the road. The police plug generators into them and try to get you know, them up and running so that we don't have major accidents at the major cross streets.
Right. Do we have such a thing as portable traffic lights? I don't know. I'm thinking of something that would go in the middle of the intersection, right in the dead middle with.
I know they have flashing lights on it. Stop signs that they put up at times. I don't know if those have been deployed or. Unfortunately, I don't have those answers on the police side of the.
Well, I know if we have an answer that we'll put it into use. That's for sure. Thank you for
you know,
all
just
your
like
service.
You said, treat you know if there's no light, you know, be courteous. Look both ways. You know. Treat it as a four-way stop, you know, proceed with caution.
Absolutely.
And, you know.
Well, that's great. I'm sure you're busy other times of the year just getting ready for situations like this too, right? I mean, you're a regular.
Planning, getting the emergency operation plan, emergency operation center up and running, staffing, things like that.
Sure.
So, yeah, there's a large contingent or a large portion of my job is administrative. But then, you know, at times like
and this is the
we're
test.
Running, and it's kind of all hands on deck with the volunteers. And we've been getting assistance from Livonia, Allen Park, Melvindale, Dearborn Heights, CERT teams. They're helping out at our shelters. Our shelters are not just for Dearborn residents. They're for Wayne County residents. So
all Wayne County. Okay.
The other communities are sending their volunteers to help shelter their residents as well. So it's been a great partnership.
Right. Wow.
You know, Dearborn led, but it's manned and staffed and assisted by the other communities. So it's an all hands approach with not just Dearborn, but you know the surrounding communities.
Well, we really appreciate your time help spread the word, and there's many ways to do that. Definitely, Brad Smith, you've got a big job for the next couple of days at least, and then it's back to that administration stuff, I guess. But thank you for your service. Yeah,
and hopefully power comes back. You know, I'd like to not have to open the shelters tonight because power's back.
I understand. Yeah, DTE said, we're going to have 90% of the power back by Sunday, but there's still those 10%. I really feel sorry for them. They say it might take a week. I hope I'm not in that category.
If you get any snow, you know, they were calling for snow earlier in the week.
So
hopefully, you know, hopefully this blows over and. No pun intended.
Don't use that word blow. Yeah. Thank you. Anyway, a little bit of humor is not bad in these times. So.
No, but you know, you don't want to do it at the expense of others either. But
of course
you
not.
Know, no. We're up and running. We're trying to get the shelters going. And by all means, anybody in the listening area, come on out and stay warm. You know, don't sleep in a cold house if you don't have to.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brad Smith, Emergency Manager, Director, Coordinator for the City of Dearborn.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Captain Brad.
Yep, thank you. And bye-bye. John, right?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Okay, thank you both for your time on that.
You're welcome. Thanks for being part of this. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that's the story directly from the mouth of Brad Smith with the fire department in Dearborn, helping to coordinate responses to emergencies like the big wind storm, which really was. In fact, John, I was seeing at the center core of the wind, because it's got a sort of a circle somewhere, sort of like tornado-like, but it was up by Hudson Bay, which is maybe 800 miles north of here in Ontario. And they said at that point in Hudson Bay, the wind pressure was the equivalent of a hurricane 2.
Wow.
So it obviously not quite as windy down here, but you know, when I initially heard about there's going to be wind on Wednesday, it's at 30 to 40 mile an hour winds. It actually was a lot more than that. There was gusts up to 60, I understand, in places, and it was all across the whole state. It wasn't just a little spot, you know. It was all, I think, pretty much just the lower part of the state. I didn't look at the map further north, but 18 counties were affected by really, really high winds. So,
kind of like the eye of the storm up at Hudson Bay. Huh?
Yeah. So somebody canoeing in Hudson Bay had no problem. Of course, there's probably ice on the Hudson Bay, but still.
A little chilly on the water, I'm sure.
What's everybody complaining about? It's fine here as long as you're in the eye, I guess. Yeah. Okay, we have other stories here. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, March the 10th, 2017. A big windstorm was the top story. Number two top story, and it's kind of related. Where did I go with it here? Okay, I know it's somewhere. Here it is. From the City of Dearborn newsletter just from a few days ago, curbside yard waste collection begins next Monday, March 13th. And boy, that is all yard waste. That is bushes and leaves and so on. And there's going to be a lot more trees. Now, again, they will not collect them unless they are trimmed down. They have to sort of be fitted into either yard waste bags or the specially identified plastic trash barrels. You can get stickers at the public library, at the Dearborn Administrative Center. Put the sticker on the plastic trash barrel that says yard waste, and then put the yard waste containers out on your regular trash day, whichever day of the week that happens to be. And it begins next week for those that put their trash out on Monday, which I do, thank goodness. I still have in my garage 8 trash barrels full of yard waste from last fall. Because they stopped doing it. And, I didn't disagree with that because it got so cold. We had a big snowstorm. I think it was at the end of November, too. And so you really couldn't rake up leaves or do any more collecting of yard waste, even though there was still 2 or 3 weeks, I think, of collecting by the city. And so I just put it in my garage. I had room enough for 8 barrels full. And then, four barrels were full. And then February was so warm, so I did a few more barrels, but there's still a lot more to go. And then now all these branches came down too, which is really, because I live in a very wooded area. Yeah,
yes.
Boy. Well, not quite as wooded as it used to be. No. So just to let you know that is the date. They will start doing it again, collecting every week, either in special bags or in appropriate 20 to 32 gallon containers if they have a yard waste sticker on them. And as I said, you can get them free at Dearborn Public Libraries and at the Dearborn Administrative Center. I assume they have power, too, at Dearborn Administrative Center. But yard waste placed in plastic bags or cardboard boxes will not be picked up. So just remember that. Here's another good one, too. Free smoke alarms and free installation are offered. And plenty are available, says the City of Dearborn. This is just for people in Dearborn, though. But you'll have to call to set up an appointment for installation. And they're even offering a Saturday date coming up the Saturday one. There's only one Saturday. It's April 29th. But the free smoke alarms and free installation, you can set up an appointment for Monday through Friday, probably regular business hours. Okay. And these free alarms and the installation is possible through a partnership with the American Red Cross. Red Cross volunteers will be installing free smoke alarms on Saturday, April 29th, and the other days too, I guess. Saturday appointments are limited, it says. Okay. But that's very important to have a smoke detector in your house. And so just call the city. The appointment phone number is 313-943-2134. So, again, free smoke alarms and free installation in Dearborn, 943-2134. Public service days are beginning, too. What does that mean in Dearborn? And maybe you don't have that in other areas. But it means that they're going to do things to your street, like clean it, sweep it, all kinds of things. And they don't want you to park on the street at all, even in front of your house, during those times. And so between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. During a neighborhood's public service day, trash day. Let's see, is that the same day as your trash day, or is it the day after? Oh, my goodness. The public service days have been in effect since March 6th. They started last week. and they'll last through December 15th. Yes, residents should now remove their parked, what I said was true, their, remove their parked vehicle from the street on their regular trash day. I think they did start it originally as the day after your trash day.
Oh.
Because when people put these barrels out, they sort of intrude on the trash, on the curbs. Or sometimes the trash barrels, after they're dumped by the robo-trucks, the trucks that have a robotic arm that picks up the big trash containers and dumps them, when they put them back down, they don't necessarily sit very firmly. They maybe sometimes tip over.
They roll over.
And they roll into the street or something. And so, but the city changed that just because people were confused. Like, you mean it's the day after the trash day? And so now it's the same day as the day you put your trash out, that you must not park your cars on the street in front of your house from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Even if your trash is picked up before 4 p.m. In other words, they already picked up the trash, so I can put my car in front of the house now. No, you can't. That's not the idea of it. I don't think they give you a... they're not going to do any parking tickets until April 3rd. Originally, when they put this, I think when they put the plan together, it was a crime, a misdemeanor crime, if you didn't, take care of your car on those public service days. But they moved that back. It's just some sort of warning or notification. And you can talk to people about public service days at the City of Dearborn, 313-943-2259. So public service day information, 313-943-2259. Wow. Well, that's a lot of city information, but what is a local radio station for but basic city information? What about downriver, John? And you mentioned, of course, we mentioned that your cell tower is out in Gros Isle, but there were some other interesting little problems downriver from the News Herald.
Yes, Jay. In Trenton, Trenton police have a good system set up. They send residents a message via the Nixley system. It invites everyone without power to come to the Westfield Activity Center or the Trenton City Hall to get warm. And the Activity Center is centrally located at 2700. Westfield Road and City Hall.
Yeah, that's Nixle, NIXLE.com. In certain cities like Dearborn uses Nixle too for police notification, and you can choose whether it goes to your email or goes to your text message on your phone. And you can also choose the level of catastrophe or whatever, severity, because the police are, certainly the police via Nixle did warn us in Dearborn about high winds coming up last Wednesday. And of course, I said, it can't be that bad. What's 30, 40 mile an hour winds? That's no big deal.
They were a lot more.
Yeah.
There's also a charging warming center that's been set up at the Kennedy Memorial Building in Lincoln Park, the Bandshell, for anyone who needs to charge their electronic devices. And we talked about that with Brad as well. you need some way to charge up, and that's where they're going.
Yeah.
Taylor officials have designated the Taylor Rec Center, 22805, as a relief center for residents. Showers, seating areas, and electronic charging stations are available. And also the William Ford Senior Activity Center, 6750 Troy, is available for seniors until 4 p.m. Thursday and from 8 to 4 p.m. Friday. The Taylor police have also increased patrols in areas of the city without power.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch to some stories from the last couple of weeks in the paper. You brought my attention to the story that I didn't do last week, although I guess I could have, and that is that residents in the area around the Warren Valley Golf Course, they met and heard Wayne County's proposal to sell the property. They're going to sell that golf course, Warren Valley Golf Course, to a developer to make a high-end subdivision that could bring an estimated $30 million to the county and to Dearborn Heights. The course is owned and run by Wayne County, was designed in 1922 by a famed golf architect, Donald Ross, and has been a big part of the Dearborn Heights community for decades. So people attended this, and there was like several hundred. I think the estimate in one story was 300 people. And it's like standing room only, according to the picture. I'm looking at the pressing guide from last Sunday, March 5th. I'm not sure when the meeting was. It doesn't say in the story, but it was sometime before March 5th, certainly. And so a lot of people had signs that said, keep our golf course. And Wayne County Commissioner Diane Webb was there, who was first to the podium, told the audience that she called for the meeting for two reasons, to hear the proposal from the county and to listen to residents. Taxpayers deserve to hear this, she said. It's important for our people to be heard. Of course, the golf course, has not been sold yet. But it's up to Wayne County, I guess, to decide. Even though Diane Webb is a Wayne County commissioner, there's a couple dozen commissioners, I think, from all over Wayne County. So, I mean, it's a majority vote, probably, of the group, I guess. And so she doesn't have the final say on that. It's a big question, you know, whether or not, did all those 300 people, do they use the golf course? Obviously public golf courses, like Dearborn runs one on Telegraph, yep. too. Mm-hmm. Can't remember the name of it now. Excuse me, City of Dearborn. It's a much less expensive than buying a membership and playing at a private golf course. So, you know, if you just can't afford a private golf course, then this is a great answer and response. I didn't know that many people still play golf, but excuse me, I don't have the Golf Channel on my television, and I don't watch it either. Oh well. That's a big issue out there. We'll see where that goes. Obviously, the project could create more than 300 jobs. I don't know if that's just building the new buildings, or whether that's just maintaining them, you know, administrative help for the subdivision. And I didn't read. I'll turn the page. It's only page two. It doesn't say if they're condos or if they're going to be individual homes. Residents listened to one of the developers' reasons and said the new development would hurt their already overcrowded public schools in Dearborn Heights. So there you are. So there's a number of opinions on both sides, and we'll see how Wayne County, what they decide to do with that. Obviously, Wayne County always in a budget crisis, and they're trying to come out of it, but it would be helpful if they could sell anything and get some money from it. But not if it loses value to the community, and if the residents are against it. So we'll see how that. But that was quite a turnout, and yes, it does matter to show your support by physically going to these meetings, whether it's a rally or a march. Of course, act responsibly, follow the rules, whatever they are about marching or protesting or whatever. But that's implied right, if not a direct right, here in America to legally protest something that we or just express our opinion on things that are still to come. All right, looking at the Times Herald now from this last Wednesday, March 8th. Oh, there's some developments. More fast food, folks. That's just what we need. Sorry. I try to avoid most fast food restaurants. Why? Because it's too fast. I like to eat slowly, personally. But nonetheless, in further developing Michigan Avenue in East Dearborn, someone has proposed a whole building that would include a Tim Hortons. And John Conroy was telling me when he came in today, there's going to be not just a new Wendy's downriver in Taylor, but a Wahlburgers. Heard of that before? Yeah, that movie star guy usually shows up, Wahlberg. He and his brother, is it, or a close friend or whatever, own the chain. I actually did eat in one Wahlburgers in Toronto. Oh, name dropper. Last summer, and just tried it out, and very good. okay, it wasn't, they didn't force me to eat too fast, so I was appreciative of that. And so, you know, just, you know, I'd just like to say, for the record, and remember, all opinions in this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, students, or administration. But my humble opinion is that we should make more food at home. We should buy fresh food, learn how to cook it. It's not that hard. And eat more vegetables and fruits and organic stuff. And cooking at home saves an awful lot of money. The fast food bill does add up. I was at a, I shouldn't name drop where I eat. Okay, I won't then. But I was at a place that has sort of healthy but quick served food yesterday in Ellen Park. And just got a large salad, a small sandwich, and a pastry for dessert. But it came to $19. $19 just for one person at a so-called fast food dining experience. It was good, but still, whoa. I do recommend cooking at home, and I do myself most of the time when there's electric power. Let's see what else. Only 10 minutes to go, and I have to tell you that don't go away after this show. If you're listening on Friday, March the 10th, if you're listening to the podcast, well, you missed it, but Kitty Love is here in the station. I know she was telling me a day or so ago that she's without power in from East Dearborn. So I think she's probably thawing out right now, getting ready for her blues show, Highway 61. That'll be from 2 o'clock today to 4 o'clock, followed, by, I hope, by Mike Holloway. Most of our volunteer DJ staff are making it in, despite what their challenges are in their own areas. And I respect them greatly for that dedication. And all the volunteers that are helping us. All over the community with all kinds of things that this windstorm has brought on. So, okay. Let's see. There's a big, big story about West Village Commons, the new development there that Ford is underwriting in the Times Herald from this week. My gosh, it's a long story. And there's a long story about what's happening in downtown Wyandotte. Great, great. I mean, normally you wouldn't have stories that long, but it sure fills up space, that's for sure. A great editorial comment from Lee Hamilton, former elected representative to Congress, and he talks about the problem with too much information. And certainly these days, a lot of that information is not necessarily true, but, problems still have to be solved. Couple of good editorial opinions there to read in the Times Herald. I do suggest that you get a copy, and I know they do usually have a newsstand in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, usually in a corner by one of the main doors, as well as, of course, maybe subscribe. And if you can't pick it up somewhere, just subscribe. It's cheaper to subscribe, by the way. Let's see here. Anything else in the Times Herald? Then we're moving to the Press and Guide from Wednesday. They have a big story, which is kind of late, but they go in depth a little bit more about the Ford. Ford Motor Company has leased a wing of the Fairlane Town Center. And I knew they were putting engineers and purchasing employees into there. Formerly, that wing was housing the department store Lord and Taylor. Yeah. And just to show that Ford needs more space, not just on their own campus, but also at Fairlane Town Center and so on. But what surprised me is 1,800 employees. 1,800 employees in that wing. Several floors, at least two floors. I can't remember if there are three floors in Lord & Taylor. But, it certainly puts a lot of people walking around inside the center there, getting good exercise whenever they get a coffee break or lunch break, and they can, of course, get food inside Fairlane Town Center. So I think probably the employees kind of like it for the chance just to get a nice walk in a heated facility too. And that's what they're doing. They have a couple of pictures inside the renovated Lord & Taylor's to accommodate Ford. In terms of cultural things that are coming up, we noticed from that paper that there's a jazz festival. It's an all-day-long jazz festival that's happening. Give us the information, John.
Yes, sir. The Cabin Fever Jazz Festival. It's going to be happening tomorrow from 1 to 9 p.m., March 11th, at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. The all-day music festival brings the outdoors inside and features jazz stars from across the country who will include sax virtuoso Richard Elliott and formerly of the Tower of Power and renowned guitarist Peter White, who will play as a special guest with nationally recognized flautist Alexander Zonchik and his band.
Mm-hmm.
This is, like you said, an all-day occurrence, and it's about $30. It's $30 per person to get in.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. They want you to bring lawn chairs, although for $45, you can sit in a regular chair that they provide.
Yes.
So it must be in some of their larger multipurpose rooms that they're doing it, rather than in the Guido Theater.
Right, where they'll have a little bit more intimate space to hear the artists play. You know?
Yeah. So you can sort of wander around, but they do suggest, even for your $30, bringing your own lawn chairs with you. It's kind of an interesting idea. I haven't heard about that happening before. Looking at our other updates here at Henry Ford College, again, we're open for business next week, back from spring break, at the 5101 restaurant operated by our culinary arts program. There'll be lunches and dinners on lunches Monday through Thursday, and then dinner on Wednesday night. And I'm sorry, it's only Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday lunch, but it's Wednesday and Thursday dinners. Okay. And next week the theme for the food is called Imperial Gastropub, and I still don't know what that means. John, you're
not even sure what it
gourmet.
Means either, Jay. No.
Okay. Imperial kind of means reminds me of like Russian, but because, you know, the empire and all that.
Right,
the Russian before the communist, you know. But
you would think there'd be some Irish kind of food in there this week because of St. Patty's Day.
Gastropub. Gastro talks about gastrointestinal, in other words, your digestive system.
Yeah.
So, of course, any food you eat, you hope you digest it. So I have to look that one up, but it's going to be great anyway. That's the theme, and it's all three lunch days, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., and Wednesday and Thursday dinners, which are 6 p.m. until 7:45. Reservations are not required, but appreciated if you want to call them. It's 313-206-5101, because that's the name of the restaurant. Okay, and it's right here in the Student Center, just down the hall from WHFR Studios. You can look in the window and wave to us, because our DJs will be here. Let's see, next special event coming up. Oh, my goodness. Next Wednesday, John, put this on your calendar. The St. Patrick's Buffet.
That's what
will
I was going to say.
March 15th.
Okay.
Yeah, so you've got that down. That's Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, darn, it's our staff meeting. Oh, well. That's $13.95 a person, and I'm sure it's got all kinds of green things that they have there. Irish food of one sort or another, probably.
And corn and red things. Corn beef.
Oh, yeah, some red things. Yeah.
And some red things, too. Yep.
Okay. Uh-huh. So that's very exciting. Also, at Top Dog Restaurant on Michigan Avenue, again, we're not promoting them directly because that would be a commercial. They are a private place, but no admission charge, so I guess if you didn't want to order, tonight is supposedly scheduled for Ursula Walker, vocalist, and Buddy Budson, who is on the piano, it looks like. I'm reading the note from a distance here, and that starts at about
6:30
or so. John recommends getting there a little early.
And it would help to make reservations there as well.
Oh, they take reservations?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. So again, that's Top Dog Restaurant on Michigan Avenue, but their jazz is really fantastic, and there's no admission charge, so, you know, You can get food there if you want to. We're not recommending you spend any money, but it's been a very successful live music venue in Dearborn for about the last 2 years now. It's going on two years anyway, and we need more live music venues. So WHFR endorses live music, not necessarily Joe's Top Dog, but we do like to let you know where the free entertainment is in the area.
Well, and we're certainly connoisseurs, Jay and I, are of good food.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that, and I know, and we know that Sunday or Friday nights that they have a different menu, including salmon and some very good seafood items for those who want to eat seafood on Friday nights. There's another, I wanted to mention this real quick. This is an event happening on March 17th, 18th, and 19th, done by the Real Life Youth Community Development. And it's a program, it's called So You Really Want to Date My Daughter. And this is a play that's from a book, and it's going to be done at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center the 17th, 18th, and 19th, 7 p.m., on Friday and Sunday, and 3 p.m. on that Saturday. This is written and directed by Mary E. Lake, executive produced by the Real Life Youth Community Development and Bishop John L. Jones, Jr. We did some publicity for them, and this is their event.
Well, that's great. That sounds like it could be fun, too.
Yep.
Last week, I just started mentioning something that I'll keep going back to besides the other theme that I'm obsessed with, and that is automation or the rise of the robots and its impact on our future for all of us. It's projected by so many different economists that because of automation, there'll be 50% less jobs available in less than 10 years. 50% less jobs available. And one of the answers to that, to keep our society on an even keel, is to actually revise the whole welfare system, stop it, and set up a universal basic income. And there's various ways to do that. But I mentioned Canada is on the forefront of this, and you say, well, it's just the very liberal, socialist. No, it's from the guy who first championed it. He's a political strategist from Ontario, Canada, right across the river from us, and longtime advocate of this. And his name is Hugh Segal, Segal. He's conservative. He said this is not something which is in any way the precinct of the left. It is, in fact, the precinct of rational people when looking to encourage work and community engagement and give people a floor beneath which they're not allowed to fail. So you give people money, and then they can spend it however they want to. Now, it won't be enough to get much out of the poverty level, but it replaces all of the bureaucracy and insanity and complexity of the welfare systems we have right now. And it's a great idea. And you might say, well, what else is happening? Are they doing it in Ontario yet? No, but maybe later this year. They have three cities throughout Canada where they're going to be trying them. And Justin Trudeau is in favor of this, their prime minister. But interestingly, Prince Edward Island, which is the smallest Canadian province, way up in the northeast north of Maine, I think, they passed a vote, and it was successful. Every citizen will receive a basic income in an attempt to reduce or, quote, potentially eliminate poverty in the province. And, of course, the Green Party, they have a very big and effective, it's still a minority party, but much bigger than the one in the United States. Green Party leader in Prince Edward's legislature proposed the motion with support of all three other political parties.